Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Yay! Yay, once again, we are here to talk about films. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me to chat about films is Abigail Bain.
Hiya.
Jimmy Thomas.
Hello.
And Anthony Evans.
How's it going?
I'm a bit ill, so not very well.
Sorry.
I'm a bit ill as well, and that hooray.
Oh,
I shouldn't have done that.
The show doesn't have to go on, but it is going on. It's not, you know, a mandatory or anything, but I'd rather do it than think about how my head feels. So, with that positive tone in mind, let's chat about the Kentucky Fried Movie, which was picked by Abigail.
Yes.
Why?
I
Seriously,
like
why?
I felt like doing a comedy. When we went to the vote for this, I was actually rooting for MacGruber, but by virtue of a coin toss, the Kentucky Fried Movie won.
Poor MacGruber.
And the reason that I picked this one is because it's so 70s and weird.
It's certainly a little time capsule to the past.
And not even a past that belongs to us. As British people, we could not be further away from this past.
It's a grubby person's memories as well. So, Abby, can you give the details of the film, please?
I can. This is the Kentucky Fried Movie from 1977. It's directed by John Landis, written by David Zucker, Jim Abrahams, and Jerry Zucker, and stars too many people for me to list.
It is an epically full show TV. It feels like a show. It's a film, but it does feel like a sketch show. That's probably why I slipped up there. I don't know. Anyway, I'll say, before I watched it for this, I almost attempted watching it when I was a kid, but I came in halfway, it confused me, it was like bizarro television I couldn't understand, and I just went to bed instead. I couldn't handle it when I was a kid. Now that I'm older, more mature film watcher, it was still a bit weird, but I persevered, and I didn't know what to expect, other than tonally a bit like the Airplane Naked Gun movies, which I'm all fine with. Those are all quite entertaining. This was a different kettle of fish, but you know, that's what I thought coming into this. Jamie, what did you think coming in when Abby suggested it?
I picked it because I was curious. Like, I liked the Naked Gun films a lot and have since I was a kid. And I didn't see Airplane properly until I was an adult, but I don't know. There's a reason it's considered a classic, like a comedy classic. And I don't... This is going to sound really weird, but I don't watch comedies very often, like as far as film goes. Like, I like films to have comedy in them, but I very rarely watch films that are specifically made to be comedies. Like, usually if I want something funny, I'll watch stand-up instead of a movie.
Right.
And I'm not sure why. Like, I don't know why I find it kind of strained when a movie tries to be just... it's just funny. That's what it is. Like, it's always too telegraphed. But I always had, like, a soft spot for Zucker stuff.
Sure.
Because it was so just deliberately stupid and over the top with just... I don't want to use the word daft. But that's what it is.
There is a thing with comedies where if a comedy commits too much to having a plot, then it's not very funny. Whereas if a comedy just goes plot, meh, sometimes it could be properly golden.
And I liked Police Squad a lot as well, which was their TV series before The Naked Gun, which The Naked Gun was then like the movie adaptation of Police Squad. So I was kind of expecting more from this.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Police Squad because we hate you. We didn't invite you to it, but we've done a couple of film commentaries for the spot. We're doing all of them because there's only six Police Squads.
Yeah,
that's with Abby, me, and Ollie because, you know, you guys are only good for reviewing. You can't even got the stamina for 26 minutes of Police Squad. It goes by too quick in fairness. So,
yeah,
there is that. If you know, tangentially linked back to what we were discussing, and let's chuck it to Anthony.
I suppose I'm in the same boat as the rest of you. I know it was by like Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams, and, you know, Airplane, Naked Gun, all these films are, well, they're pretty amazing comedies, I think. And I know this was the first one, so I was prepared to give it a little leniency, as it's, I'm guessing it was their first kind of foray into kind of sketch parody movies kind of thing that they do, and that they kind of cornered the market on that, really.
They have a very deliberate style, and it's the thing of lots of straight men, but lots of ludicrous things going on, and just kind of just keep the gags there heavy, and even if some of them aren't brilliant, there'll be another one, so don't worry.
Yeah, and I did hear good things about this from some of my friends who'd seen it years ago. So I think I was coming in with slightly high expectations for it.
And you, Abby, you want to elaborate on what it was you were expecting?
Well, I'd seen it a couple of times before, but because they were at quite a distance, I could only...
You should really get the TV in your own room when you watch it.
Because I didn't remember it very well, but that means I could only remember one or two sketches, because there isn't... You don't remember the Kentucky Fried Movie as one long thing. So
you remember it as hallucinations from a fever dream.
It is like you've watched late night TV and you fell asleep and you sort of, your brain picked up where the TV left off. And it's just sort of broken and weird and a little bit more racy than the TV was, and a little bit more racist possibly than your dreams would like to be. But you know, it is a weird, like, dreamlike television. It's like a night of TV, like with news shows and adverts and then a movie and then some more TV. Like, it's kind of like an alternate night of television in America.
It does feel a little bit like it's like staying up as an early teenager in the late 90s and watching Channel 4 at 1:30 in the morning.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's probably where I saw this first.
Yeah.
It is for naughty boys staying up to see a little bit of adult fun and naughty humour. Like, really, it's strange.
One of the things that you guys have mentioned there is that from the writers you were expecting a certain thing, but nobody's mentioned that John Landis directed this. And
yeah.
There's something about John Landis where he finds things funny that no one else does. Like in Blues Brothers, for example, I really like the Blues Brothers, but he seems to think it's funny where there's loads of cars crashing all the time.
That is funny. It's the best bit.
But it's not funny, it's just...
It should be tragic.
It's sort of spectacular. But there's other movies I've watched by John Landis and gone, you think that's a joke, don't you? It isn't.
Well, I don't know. That seems a bit harsh to say that isn't a joke, but...
No, there's... It's
done for everyone, not every one of them anyway.
It's just every now and again, he'll throw in something that nobody expected and no one understands.
He's a weird guy. I like him. I like him when he makes cameos. You said, Abby, he might have briefly been in this as...
He was a cameo in this. He got punched by the gorilla.
Ah, very good. A good place to start then is, you know, that's kind of the opener of the movie is a fake kind of news broadcast, isn't it?
Well, there's stuff before that.
Oh, is there? Well, go on. Let me know.
We are, to an extent, going to have to do blow, blow, blow in this, but we can glaze over certain parts
at our leisure. Like I did for much of the film.
I would like to talk about the theme briefly.
Go on.
Because I really like it. It's one of my favourite things.
Oh, you mean the music
movie? Yeah. The karaoke.
It's good, yeah. It's a nice song. Yeah. Just bookending one mad dream. Anyone else like the song at the start and end?
Not the thing I remember the most.
I did like it. I was like, you know, enjoying it, like bobbing my head along a little bit.
I know what I'll do. I will go through the lineup of the film.
Okay.
And if anyone has something that they particularly want to say, say stop or just pitch in whatever it is you're going to say.
Right. Yeah.
See if this works. So the first thing was News at 11. I take us?
They got funny... They were funny. It was funny for the first one because it was like, "What's that about?" Then when they did it, all the subsequent punchlines were like, "Eh," because it was just something weird I've just said, film at 11. And then it was like, what? Because it's the first time, it's funny. And then like after that, I was like, oh, here he is saying something daft again.
Was it the first one he said, I'm not wearing any pants, film at 11?
Yeah.
No, that was one of the later ones.
Was it? Because that's my favourite one.
Yeah, I like that one.
Well, either way, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they were funny, but it did seem like it was the same punchline every time.
I think it was that they weren't all funny. It's just that we all picked a different one at a different point in the film that was.
I guess it's because the first one for me was just, I didn't know what to expect. And then it was like, okay, that was weird. And it hadn't set a tone yet.
Yeah. You want to pitch anything in, Anthony, or should I move on?
They were quite short. I got the joke, I suppose, about like these really brief news casts about horrible things and good things coming hand in hand. But there's not much to say. I mean, they're only like, what, 5 seconds long each?
Yeah.
Just something to break up everything else, I guess.
Okay, I know what is suffice.
Yep.
That's not the point, is it? Tell him to speak.
I'm sorry.
Single word answers only, please.
I apologise. That was just for the funny, and I'm sorry.
Mm.
Argon Energy.
Oh, that was the whole the sketch about a news, like a news anchor's presenting the idea that like an alternative energy is greasy teenagers, discarded combs and things, and you know, grease from burgers and farts and yeah.
That's one of my bottom sketches because it's just disgusting.
I kind of liked it, but it was the kind of the start of the first kind of glimpse of, that's a bit of stereotyping going on here, I feel.
Lowering our brows. did it suggest that it was greasy Italian corns or was that good? Because I thought it was funnier.
Good.
I thought it was funnier. Being racist, than it was like implying that people's combs are particularly greasy. So, I don't condone hating the Italians. Love them; they're great. And the Italian Americans, in case they feel differently about themselves. I love Cake Boss. All right, and The Godfather. I think I'm inadvertently being a bit pejorative. Oh, talking my way out of it. It wasn't a brilliant idea, but you know,
it was a different time.
Yes.
All the rage.
I liked it.
What, racism?
No, well, I just don't. I liked the sketch. I thought it was quite funny.
It was one of their most committed sketches, I think. They did that completely straight, and I liked it.
Yeah.
I also, because it tonally is a bit like, to make a modern reference of something I enjoy, Drawn Together is a fabulously racist cartoon, but it has a go at everyone. Much in the same way that South Park kind of invented the notion of cartoons hating everyone. But Drawn Together is tremendously racist, but it's done with irony in mind and therefore acceptable. I think this was as well. I think it was like a light jab and not...
Yeah, really it's not. There's no, like, vicious, vindictive racism in this.
But it does seem to imply teenagers are all horrible.
Well, that's true.
They are, though.
So... then we had AM Today, which had the outside broadcast with Ron Butler, Count Point Account, Astrology, and the Animal segment.
Oh, you've bundled a lot there.
Yeah, it was one of the longer segments.
There was a part in the Animal segment that one of the few points in the film where I laughed properly, where she's explaining the Australian gerbil or hamster, and there's a whole like explanation and... You know, he pets it and everything, and then he says, "All right, moving on to the next animal," and she just chucks it over her shoulder.
I knew you'd like that, Joe. As soon as I saw it, I went, "Joe likes that."
Yeah.
It was good. Like, what I liked is there was loads of banal daytime TV chit chat that at no point was satirical. It was just, let's reflect reality. And it made the joke all the better. Like, it really worked for that.
I thought it was a nice little sketch. I thought they weren't the best jokes, but they kept coming quite quickly in that one. So it was okay.
It was probably the nicer ideas in the film were when they just sort of... It felt like a precursor to Anchorman or something.
Yeah, like, it's that... Well, that's the thing with these guys. Like, even in their weaker... Like, I would consider this one of their, like, weaker films, probably partly because they were just... This is their very first movie. So they were sort of finding their feet and weren't sure how far they could take a lot of their humour... But with this and then the subsequent films, they did pretty much invent a whole subgenre of comedy.
Yeah, with this, you could tell that they just got a little bit giddy and ran away with themselves. Yeah.
It felt like they had loads of ideas for a good TV sketch show, but maybe that would be too risky a thing to put on or something. Like, there was people... I just think it would have worked better, maybe as... Well, every week we do a news team sketch and, like, have all this kind of weird, surreal sketches all together, but have it be, like, you know, 27 minutes long and have it as a... Like, because it was just, as a movie, you were, like, you didn't know what was coming, and that gave it... That was an unusual feeling, but I don't know if it worked.
It's a lack of focus, I think, is the problem with this, and I'll come to it later, but... One of my major problems with it is, for the most part, it's all these like short little sketches, and like some of them don't work. Some of them are quite funny, and then you have this 3-hour full of yen movie in the middle of it. Like,
It does kind of go on. There's like, it's a very strange thing because I was trying to think of comparisons, and a lot of them are kind of British related because I'm very aware of British comedy more than the American stuff that went on at the same time, and it's like Carry On, Up the Python meets Kenny Everett. It's just the weirdest thing.
It's a little bit like the very first Monty Python film.
Was Meaning of Life, was it?
No.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, because just a collection of their best-known sketches refilmed and put together in a movie. So it was like this. It was a sketch movie for like an hour and a half of like pretty much unrelated Monty Python sketches.
Yeah, or like alternative anarchistic comedy that you left you confused, but also laughing, you know, but not quite the same caliber, I would say, in the fried movie we're talking about.
Yeah.
Talking about the list you mentioned, Abby, Counterpoint...
It's hard to say it the wrong way around, because Point Counterpoint is an actual show.
Yes.
But the one that they did was called Count Point Account.
Yeah, which sounds like a segment in Sesame Street, like where he's pointing and counting things is Count Count. Is that his name? Count von Count?
What is his name? Yes, Count von Count.
Isn't he just the Count?
The Count. Okay. Well, I feel silly for not remembering. But anyway, it was a good sketch, nothing to do with that. It was what I liked about it. Again, that whole setting up completely serious, and it was just unlistenable, like, well, he just seems to be lost in his own words. And then the counterpoint comes on, and it's just, it was as if I had written the sketch, because it was just, she was just childishly, like, abusive.
Yes.
And didn't counter in any way. Like, it was just funny.
She was a big Rudy Rude.
She was. Stuck her finger up and everything. But it was the way she said it, and the delivery of the woman, because he kept in character of someone on one of these shows. So it was kind of winning me over at the start, I got to say.
I was hoping you'd pick that up, because I was about to do it.
Yeah, so, you know. The astrology sketch I thought was good as well, because it just sort of nicely pastiched astrology. It sort of had a go at it, lampooned it correctly, and then it killed it with an arrow, which was kind of funny.
There was it's a nice setup as well, because that then keeps happening throughout the film.
Yeah.
Of all the running gags to pick.
Yeah.
Killed by arrows, callbacks. And then, you know, the monkey going nuts was funny. But again, you're like, well, obviously, you kind of expect it because when it's a guy in a suit, well, it's going to, you know, they basically imply that he's impotent in a nice, friendly TV chatty way. And then he takes offense and smashes up. And he goes nuts. And it's kind of funny once it gets properly ridiculous. Anyone else? Gorilla?
It was kind of funny I was impressed by the suit. Like, I didn't think the film had the budget for a gorilla costume that reasonably good.
They chose wisely, or had it from before.
And it was Rick Baker in that suit, who is a makeup artist.
Oh. They could have done a nice bit after the credits where he just in the monkey and the gorilla suit does someone's makeup nice. Just sort of reference that. I'm adding jokes. That's how when you get rolling with writing sketch comedy, it's very, not that I know, I'm not, you're going to check out my sketches on none of the channels that I'm just saying, when you get going trying to write sketches, you have loads of ideas once the ball's rolling.
Well, because it was directed by John Landis, Rick Baker is probably like among like film nerds is the guy who designed the well, he did the makeup effects for An American Werewolf in London. Mm. So he's known for that agonizingly slow, painful-looking werewolf transformation scene from that film.
Man, he's caused a lot of people distress, not just the fake news team.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, any other things before Abby tells us what happened next?
I'm going to skip over the car alarm gag, because that's pretty much just funny. A gag.
Yep. Dismissed.
And move on to Catholic High School Girls in Trouble. This
one caught me slightly unawares.
Because, yeah.
Because it was a lot odder than I thought it was going to be.
And brazen is also
yeah.
It was just so... There's a group of people, a large group of people, I'm not saying that this is minority, that think sex is funny, and there's a group that doesn't. Well, that's a little black and white, because there is a grey area, where, generally speaking, I don't find sex funny, except for very few exceptions. And this was not one of those exceptions.
I really like the title of the show. Well, that was funny.
I know what you mean, Abby. I think it's more... It's not funny when it's kind of just being exploited.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's a ring of truth to it, then it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like it's the whole debate we had all the way through Carry On Up the Kellogg, the podcast thing. I can't remember what that's called. Hello to Wellville. Welcome to Wellville.
Road to Wellville.
There we go. It's just Carry On Up the Kellogg to me. But that was the whole thing of that was, is sex funny, yes or no? And generally, it isn't very amusing.
Essentially, if the punchline is nudity, then it's generally not that funny. It's like, oh, there's boobs, ha! No. Yeah.
Then it was very, at times, it was just like, when there was particularly some fondling and stuff going on, it was like, well, I can't believe how graphic you're being. It's kind of like, you're making us all feel a little naughty and inappropriate. Yeah, so it's kind of odd, though. It kind of tonally was kind of, whoa, that's actually a fun... The tone going further than you expected is funny, I think. But the general premise of slightly sultry Catholic girls in trouble, like, you know, it was a bit silly.
I mean, it is poking fun at a very specific type of film. Those kind of exploitative, semi-pornographic, like softcore pornographic and kind of weird films that you would get in the 70s.
Yeah, and there's a reason why you either go fully blown into the world of pornography or you don't skirt around the edges, because there's no point. You're going to have frustrated people and unamused people, and that's not a good combination.
I did think the pie in the face reversed gag was pretty funny, just because I wasn't expecting it when it happened.
Yeah, and I think... Yeah, I was going to say, I think the biggest laugh I had was from this sketch when like a topless woman just throws a cream pie at the back end of a horse.
I would say it's funnier when you describe it in words.
Was there also a dwarf whipping something?
There was a dwarf dressed as a clown whipping some women dressed to the ceiling.
Dressed as a what?
Dressed. They were hanging down. They were tied up.
Oh, right. It's like, why would you dress as a ceiling?
That guy's best gig of his entire career. I don't care what he made after that. He could be inside R2-D2. Don't care. That is probably his best day ever on set.
Yeah. Incidentally, he wasn't inside R2-D2. I've met the man. You've met the man, Abby. You should know who was inside R2-D2.
I know, but I was just trying to think of what is the other best gig.
I don't mean to take us off on a tangent, but you've met Kenny Baker.
We were at a low quality meet people who were extras in Star Wars and a few people who were in proper movies as well.
In Swansea.
Because it was Swansea trying to do meet the stars of your favourite sci-fis. It was like a tent with a man who's an extra in James Bond, and in real life, he was an old man with a gravy stain on his tie, trying to sell pictures showing him in like Star Wars and Bond, like on the desk in a uniform, not doing anything. But I liked that guy; he was nice. But it was a low bottom end. I think you know there was a guy who's in the Predator costume was there. He was very tall.
He was very tall. Yeah. But we digress. Nice.
Yeah. Lovely, but it was a little bit low rent.
I think getting back to Catholic High School Girls in Trouble.
Let's move on.
I just want to say one thing that I think it wasn't funny because they think naked women are funny, and naked women aren't funny.
Mm.
You're either all artistic, apparently, like, oh, the female form is beautiful, or you're all her boobs, which isn't the same. But naked men are funny.
Thanks. So that's, yeah. That's all of us just hilarious.
Only because we've got all this ridiculous rubbish hanging off the front of us. But that's, you know.
There are certain kinds of men who are perfectly happy to be naked in front of people. And that makes everyone uncomfortable. But then the people who are uncomfortable and naked to people in front of people are hilarious.
Yes, that's true. let's just move on because I'm blushing at the idea of trying to talk around the stuff that happens anyway.
The next was Feel Around Cinema.
It isn't that graphic. It's literally, you know, an usher helps you get involved in the film that you're watching.
By slapping
you around. Fiddling with stuff, hitting you, scrunching you, kissing you. Does he kiss him? Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Another good build-up where guy goes to a cinema, he's getting some popcorn, I can smell a joke coming. I mean, you kind of actually, it blew it a little bit because it said, you know, it's a feel-a-rama, that's how it's filmed. And it's like, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, you kind of go, all right. You kind of guess.
It lost its comedy value because I knew exactly what the joke was before he even sat down.
Mm.
Because of the way they set it up, I basically guessed the whole thing before he'd even sat down, even to the extent of knowing what the punchline of the whole scene was going to be, that is the next film going to be porn? Yeah, it was. Well, it was Deep Throat, but yeah.
And the usher, who's been neutral all this time, he's enjoying the idea that he's going to have to reenact that film. Yeah.
Gays. That was another very kind of 70s joke. Oh, isn't homosexuality hilarious?
Don't want that to happen to me. Anyone else? Feel-a-rama?
Yeah, it was Futurama. I thought it was a nice idea. I think you're being a bit unfair, Jamie, because like you said, the way it did set it up, I mean, it was obvious and it was kind of meant to be obvious.
Yeah, I suppose you haven't got time to be subtle when you've got about 3 minutes for a script.
Yeah. And I did like the way they really committed to it, where he was properly flinging him around in that chair. And when he had the knife to his throat, he was out. Even if it was blunt, he was still getting it in there. That left him bruised.
I liked some of the idea of it, and I didn't hate it. I just, you know. Me and Jamie were sitting there going, well, it's obvious, but where is this going? Yeah. But it's something, someone being messed with is funny, I guess. And, you know, it featured the guy who appears in the TV show MASH.
That's it, it was Rizzo. I was trying to remember who he was.
Rizzo? Ego.
Ego, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
It was Rizzo.
I'm thinking of, no, there's a Rizzo in MASH, the guy with the cigar. Yeah.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah, but no, you're right, it's Ego, the guy at in the mess tent.
Yeah,
but you know, that's just a bit of trivia. So
no, I was about to ask, does anybody know where he's from, because I recognised him and it was driving me insane.
Well, Abby was on the case, in fairness. That was hurt a bit.
Next up, I only have one thing to say about Night XPM, the sleeping tablet one. Was that guy did a fantastic job of being asleep.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say, is it? It's just watching someone get abused for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It did make me laugh at the end where you see him in the background get up and fall and hit his head on the table with the pillow. Just because it was such a basic bit of, like, violent slapstick.
Sometimes you don't have to get complicated about things.
Yeah.
You just have to have someone falling over and hurting themselves. And it's funny. The next one was High Adventure. With Paul Burmaster and Claude Lamont. And it was an interview show where Claude Lamont is an explorer-type dude and Paul Burmaster is the host.
The thing that's funny about this is if you were doing it, it would be so much fun. Both being the prodder with the microphone, just knocking guys on the head and getting too close and stirring, like going in their drinks. And like doing that would be fun. And trying to not stop doing your lines would be so much fun.
This is probably, like, of everything in the film, this was probably my favourite sketch.
I want that to happen in real life, though. Like, outside the context of films. And people try and front it out genuinely.
I think this might be my favourite sketch as well, actually. Now that I can think about it. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms because it they're was too such different.
It was such a basic and stupid premise. Like,
and they played it absolutely straight. As well.
I know.
Yeah, that's kind of... I'd say the first half of it was probably one of my funniest, my favourite sketch as well. I think it may have gone on a bit too long. But yeah, like, the humour, it's such a silly, simple thing. But the humour was, for me, them not reacting to what was happening.
Yeah. There's some good moments like that in the police squad where they take a lift sometimes and then the lift opens and something ridiculous is happening and they get hit with stuff. But they keep having their conversation. So Police Squad does that joke plenty, and it's really good in that.
Well, that was always, like, that was the appeal of Leslie Nielsen when he started appearing in their stuff initially, like Airplane and Police Squad, is that he would play it completely straight.
Oh, yeah.
In the face of just ludicrous things happening.
We won't talk about this too much, but I do want to talk about how Leslie Nielsen hasn't changed the manner in which he acts from serious to comedy. He's been exactly the same the whole time. It's just at some point somebody decided... This is funny.
Yeah.
True enough.
But please, continue.
It's a bit harsh, pulling apart the gags. It's so unfair to just dismantle comedy and judge it.
You're not funny.
That's really unfair. It's not how comedy should be viewed. But, you know, what else are we meant to talk about? The mise-en-scène? No.
I'm also going to contradict myself here because it's really funny when Claude Lamont accidentally kisses Paul Burmaster.
I think it's because they reacted in exactly the right way. Yeah. Instead of making it all, oh my gosh, he just went, well, that was awkward. And the other guy was all, I quite like that.
I think it was also the fact that the kiss noise was so, like, obviously dubbed in and exaggerated.
It was also extra funny because just prior to that, they had to stop saying the phrase, poisonous fish.
That's true. It's one of the underappreciated things you forget. It's just got all these fish ornaments there. And they are, like, if you listen to what they're talking about and you ignore the microphone bipping them on the head and stuff, there's an extra element of weird. The lighting of the cigarette from the microphone didn't make enough sense. And at that point, I was like, okay, you're right. You got to stop now. And with Anthony, it did go on a shade long.
Were you going to say anything else, Anthony?
No, but just like, yeah, when like the humour wasn't involving the people, it kind of was a bit weird.
Right.
Like when the boom mic was just going off on its own. But up until then, I think that was probably one of the favourite sketches so far.
After that was a cameo from Bill Bixby and his pain clinic.
And his amazing beard, which I'm not used to seeing on him. I'm used to him turning green, but not growing a beard.
Yeah.
No thoughts?
There's not a whole lot to say about this. I didn't realise I didn't find people being hit on the head with bottles and bricks and stuff. That isn't funny to me. And I didn't know until I saw it.
It was a pretty, like, what, sketch? It wasn't the best. I was kind of like, oh, Bill Bixby's in a sketch. And then it was like, oh, no, this sketch is not entertaining. But think of Home Alone 2 when Macaulay Culkin chucks bricks at the criminals and they hit Joe Pesci in the head and what's the other one called? Chris something?
Daniel Stern.
Marv.
Daniel Stern.
Yeah.
Marv, Daniel Stern, whatever. That is super funny. I've been on the fourth floor crying with laughter at men with bricks. So slapstick hitting people with things is funny.
Are we talking about in just films or also in real life?
Real life especially. But you've been framed. I mean, I'll point you out to Laurel and Hardy. Like, slapstick is very funny. Bill Bixby talking a load of rubbish and slightly boring ideas for hurting people.
I think the comedy of the scene is kind of lost to a more modern audience because I think it's supposed to be funny because it's Bill Bixby being serious and silly stuff happening. But to us, it's just kind of like some guy.
Maybe. Well, to me, it was Bill Bixby, a.k.a. David Banner, and in every episode of The Hulk, the TV show, he seduces his way across the world, ruins a building, saves the day, and has to trot on to the next town to seduce the next lady. So he's quite the ladies' man, is he in my mind. So I was just a bit, ooh, this must be funny. So, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe people don't know who Bill Bixby is now. I did a bit of a U-turn on myself. Sorry.
You did. That was mildly confusing.
Thanks.
Next was Lingering Odors. That was pretty much just well, the punchline was particularly... Ooh, I say.
I thought that was pretty funny just because it was so on the nose.
Yeah.
I knew it was coming as soon as they started going through the door and, like, you know, describing the smell. I was like, oh, somebody's going to swear.
I thought it was going
to be funny, and it was.
I thought it was going to be for a product, but it isn't.
What do you mean?
Like, I thought it was going to be for Smell Away or something like that.
Yeah, they just talk about this woman's house and the lingering odors, and they're like, right, let's move on.
Yeah, they didn't solve the problem, did they?
No.
Like, if it had been like a Febreze advert, they would have had people spraying it, little, like, I don't know, flowers coming out of the thing, graphics of flowers and fibers getting embedded with liquid crystals, and then people coming in going, oh, wow, it smells like the best thing ever. It's like potpourri has punched me in the face. Great. Yeah. But they didn't. They could have done with that. Also, I would suggest, not that I'm amending comedy, but I am. I also would have had another woman come in and been absolutely appallingly atrocious about... Like, because the first one just said it smelled in a kind of sweary way, but I would have just really gone, whoa, that was unbelievably horrible. You know? I won't give examples, but some crass terminology would have been used. And imagery.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. I would have gone further.
The sex instruction record.
It goes on, right? And it's kind of, you kind of like, okay, where's this going? And it's a little bit, it gets a little bit, do you know what it's like? It's like the Goofy sketches. Do you know where, like, Goofy from Disney gets tutorials from a record player on how
Wait,
to do
gets
sports.
Laid? What?
It was like an X-rated one. This is without animated dogs. Oh, that sounds terrible. It was like one of those like skits that Goofy does, and it could have worked, and it kind of did, but it got a little too saucy and it got a bit crass, and then it kind of saved it by having, oh, what was his name?
Big Jim Slade.
Yeah, Big Jim Slade was awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly funny to me at all. Like, I was like just watching it because I was trying to get through the film, and then that happened. Like,
I don't think I've ever been so happy to see a giant black man in his pants before. Just to see him bust into the room. Oh, that way.
My goodness, Abby, you don't have to go to the same tone as the Kentucky Fried movie. That was... Whew. Anyway, like what was kind of unfair was the woman was a complete knockout, and there was a lot of, you know, not being able to laugh at it because it was just... actually distractingly, like, it was essentially just two people learning how to make love, and a lot of it was the build up and then doing gags about going to the bathroom and, you know, stuff. And it was just too saucy.
I like the actors' performances in it.
Performances?
Yeah, you know what I mean.
I liked how eager he was.
Yeah, and they did really well with what they were working with, but essentially the joke wasn't really funny until like that final punchline.
And it is just, we got this idea for a punchline. Basically, a massive, muscular black man with a moustache and an afro bursts in Speedos and rescues the woman from her disappointing night of passion.
It does also set up a nice, very brief callback in Fistful of Yen.
Yeah.
He's just there in the background at one point.
He makes the save, doesn't he? Like, again.
Yeah.
He does. We'll come to that in a minute.
It introduced him as like... they kept referencing a football team as well, and he was like a football player or something, allegedly. I don't know if he was or not. The Braves, is that one of the teams?
I think they did name drop the Braves, but the guy goes by a different name, so I don't know if it is him. Manny Perry.
All right. I'm lost now. It's gone too American. Let's go back to talking about, you know, Monty Python and Kenny Everett.
Next was A Fistful of Yen. Which, if, as Jamie has already expressed, this sort of flabby middle.
But only because... I won't say the sketch isn't well observed. It is, on its own, it would have been a fairly funny parody of, like, these cheapy kind of Hong Kong films from like the 60s and 70s, but it just totally breaks the flow of the whole movie.
Yeah, it is almost it's obviously a direct parody of Enter the Dragon.
Mm.
And there's little bits of like it begins where it's almost setting up that it's going to be like a Bond movie, and then launches into full on like Bruce Lee parody, and it's like it has moments where it's funny, and yeah, like you said, it is well observed. Like it's not just out there and not accurate, but it's so long in comparison to the rest of the film, and like for the most part up until this point it had been moving along reasonably well, and like a lot of the sketches didn't quite work, but it was funny enough, and then they just take this one joke and draw it out for what feels like for this is where I was starting to have trouble. Like I was it felt like the film was just going on and on.
And I think one of the problems was, because they did some slightly comedy, but, you know, generally martial arts bits, it kind of was just like, oh, well done, stuntmen, for coming at it multiple times. But you can't really thrill me with action and still be doing crappy jokes about henchmen and prison. Like, some of the stuff about prison, like,
there was
people were in different cells with different things about them, and it was just like, these are so banal, and I don't understand what's funny about it. These like what was the joke anyway? It was like, I can't remember. It was so.
Some are drunk, and don't know where they are and don't care. Some are drunk and don't know where they are and do care. Some aren't drunk, know where they are and care.
See, it's not not really it's funny. Like,
yeah,
and then
it's a really
action,
overly it's complicated like, joke.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was just. It was flabby.
It was just too much. Like Anthony said, if it had been a film of its own, if they committed to just making a satire of Bruce Lee movies, then they had a really good start. They could have made something that was really good. But to stick it in the middle of all of this was just too much.
Yeah,
it
and,
feels like...
And it itself is like the length of the film we've already watched. It's like it's 30 minutes and we've already had 30 minutes, but they've managed to like cram in like, what, 10... sketches into that.
Like, some of the good jokes were lost in it because it was so big.
Yeah.
Some of the good stuff from it included his detachable hand and the various things that replaced his detachable hand.
Yep.
And the bugged room, I really liked.
I did like the bugged room scene. I thought that was actually funny.
The best moment about that was when she pointed to just the little old man in the corner with the boom mic.
Because they do the whole, I have to point out the microphones that they're listening into us conversation. And you kind of get it's going to escalate. But the way it escalates is just, oh, you did catch me there. That was legitimately funny. And then it keeps going. It goes far enough. Like sometimes the sketches taper out and you kind of go, you could have done one more or one less. But this one, you know, it showed the room full of guys. I was like, yeah, okay. Pass, tick.
I did like the blind date scene as well with the childish names for characters that again borders on racism, but it's a funny joke. Like, <I can't...
laughs> it was a bit like the board game Mysteries of Peking. I don't know if anyone's played that, but that plays around with the idea of borderline racist names of Chinese people.
What made me laugh about it was that it made, like, with the names of the characters, they made the joke that I was, like, making about the... Like, it got to Hung Well, Long Wang, and I was like, oh, God, are you really doing this? Like, you're doing penis jokes and then enormous genitalia. And I thought, oh, well, at least you're aware.
Yeah. That was my thing. I think the ones that work best in this are the ones where you're thinking, oh, they're not going to. They actually did. They actually did that. Okay, then. But they had the gumption to actually do it.
But I don't know. No, I just like. I feel with Fistful of Yen that the initial idea was to be another, because there's like several of the sketches and there's some movie trailers, like Catholic Schools Girls in Trouble and the Armageddon one, and I kind of got the feeling that this was another trailer idea. And then when it came time to put the movie together, they realized they didn't have enough of a runtime. And they had to pick something, like they didn't know quite what else to do, so they decided to try and draw one of them out.
They had too many ideas, and they went, "You know what? We'll just use them and make it the middle of the Fright movie."
Stuff in this that doesn't the toy robot joke was just
baffling.
Bizarre. I have no idea what that was a reference to.
It was funny to see a guy be scared of a robot and burst through a window, but because it didn't obey the etiquette of cultural references, it didn't it came out so out of nowhere. You were like, well, if I'd have understood why a robot is scary, or do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, it was an odd one.
And I don't know if it's a film reference that I've missed, or I don't know.
Maybe it's like a reference to kind of Japanese big monster, or
that's kind of what I thought.
Robot things,
but that's a different genre to B movie martial arts. I get mashing up is an okay thing, but whatever. I mean, we generally all found it a bit long and a little bit just drawn out, and could have been. It's what just wasn't Kung Pao or Kung Fu Hustle. So
the Wizard of Oz twist at the end was okay.
Yeah, it was sort of. I was okay with it, but at the same time. And it sort of felt like a cheat.
Yeah, I did like the villain being outside the window, and at one point accidentally brings his mechanical hand back into the spot and realizes and hides it again. Like that was pretty good. And I like the list of things that he now Dorothy makes that he could do to like help his community.
The only one I can remember is start a library, and that's not the one that's funny. I'm sad that I can't remember.
Nancy, were you going to say something about Kung Pao or?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's a really good comparison as to how this could have worked better if it was a little more knowing, like Kung Pao is.
I don't remember Kung Pao all that well, but I do remember it being consistent within its conceit and just running with it.
Yeah, but at the same time, like even though this doesn't work, you can see that there's potential there for the seed of Kung Pao to have been planted with something like this.
Yeah. If anything, you could mop up a few of the jokes from this and make a Kung Pao sequel. I mean, it would be pointless because they're in this, but it's almost like they had some good material, but not enough.
And the thing,
they didn't commit enough with it.
Yeah. And the thing I find weird is, like, even though this is kind of like the weakest part of the film, essentially, it is the basis then for the rest of like the writers' film careers, like over the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's odd. Yeah. I mean, they obviously did enough, alternative comedy stuff for people to go, oh, do you know what? These guys can be having another go at it. I didn't really say much, but I did really like the ending it with a Dorothy, just absolutely turning into the end of The Wizard of Oz. And it was just like, wow, you're really just... We're going to last a long, big bit where it's just like suddenly the end of a martial arts movie is exactly the same as Wizard of Oz. And it was just, I like that. It was, again, like a Monty Python thing where we can't really write ourselves out of this sketch idea. So let's just do something weird and we'll move on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy had a funny face all the way through and he looked brilliant with the pigtails on.
Yeah, he was good. He was really good.
The knockoff Bruce Lee man.
Yeah. He was genuinely good at the martial arts stuff.
He had a child's head on the wrong body, though, didn't he?
But I'm always impressed, and I forever will be, and I don't know why, when somebody who's in really good physical shape, who is, like, you know, buff and can do martial arts stuff, has a really good sense of humour and comic timing. I don't know why, but every single time I see it, and you see it a lot in films, but every single time it surprises me.
It's lucky as well that you don't hate him for it. Because you could so easily, oh, you and your nice body and your health and your humour, But no, with this guy, it's like, I like you, you weirdy.
Well, much like our podcast has become a bit flabby in the middle, let's move on and talk about bits. Or not quickly, we just talk about them.
Well, there's just one little bit I want to mention quickly, and that was the tour guide bit was really funny as well. And that took me by surprise, even though I'd seen it before when she came through. Like, oh,
yeah, it's a bit like Austin Powers, that bit felt. Like, just the evil base as a tour guide. That's like a...
But, moving on.
On film spoof that they sort of set up.
Willa time came next, about the Buddhists drinking beer.
Krishna's, was it? I thought.
Hi Krishna's, quite right. But still, what?
Yeah.
Good It's a spoof advert, I guess, but
yeah, not terrible, but not like hilarious either.
Then there was
Harry Krishna's funny, like, and some people just love a Harry Krishna concept. I always think of like Ross Noble because he has a routine that is about Harry Krishnas, and it just he has so much fun talking about them that it kind of makes me like Harry Krishna jokes now as well.
Next was a bit that I know Rich got very excited about, and that was the Scott-Free board game.
Because that would be a genuinely fun board game.
Yeah. That would be one of the best board games ever.
That's good. I mean, it's so in bad taste that it's wonderful. The idea that they didn't reference JFK other than visually, really. They sort of said, you get, like, there was a general premise of that, but it had, like, the cards were on the grassy knoll, they had the library or book depository or whatever, and it was just, I do like the idea of that.
That's dark and funny. Like, that sketch is the potential that the rest of the film doesn't really meet.
Sure.
Because it's a great idea, and it's funny, and it's short, and then, like, it's kind of refreshing after Fistful of Yen. But, you know, it's concise, it gets the point across, and then it moves on to the next one, which is also reasonably funny, the That's Armageddon one.
What I like best about the That's Armageddon, which is just a sort of spoof trailer for a disaster movie, is that George Lazenby is cracking up the whole time.
Yeah.
And they do again, the bombarded thing happens where lots of stuff's happening, and it is just like, he literally couldn't get there without smoking at the end.
Yeah, it just has some. That one has some good jokes in it, like Donald Sutherland as the clumsy waiter.
Just in there to kick himself in the face.
Yeah.
What's that? That one in particular actually shows this thing that John Landis does. I'm convinced that he is trying to break his actor. In every film he's ever made, he will fling stuff in there, just daring him not to laugh or to scream or to cry or whatever it is.
It comes back to the high adventure thing where Claude Lamont is getting prodded in the face with the... It's when the microphone starts making electric shaver noises as it rubs against his face, and you can see him. He's just on the edge of completely losing it.
I feel there should have been a good blooper reel at the end of this film, just to kind of show them all cracking and forgetting their lines or whatever.
I'm always happy when I see George Lazenby in a film, especially when it's like a comedy, because he wasn't the best James Bond, and I don't think he's many people's favourite, and his career kind of didn't ever really take off after that. So whenever I see him in something, and he seems to be having a good time, I feel really pleased for him, because none of that was his fault.
Yeah.
He deserved more Bond movies. I really think his performance was good. I mean, you know, it's not like, what's the name of the author? Ian Fleming. It's not like Ian Fleming was a brilliant writer. I mean, his books are schlocky. And therefore, like, how could you be so, that's not Bond? It's like, what, he wasn't obnoxious enough for you? I would jump to the defense of Lazenby as a Bond. And I think, you know, he hasn't had enough success. Maybe he thinks he's done fine. Sorry, George. I'm sure you've done fine. You've probably got a nice family. Probably all the ice cream you could want, right?
He's a lot richer and more successful than any of us.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Perspective. Carry on.
Next was Henry Gibson's Appeal for the Dead. This is in my candidate pool for my least favourite sketch, because it's so, again, it's gross.
It's a dark humour sketch, and that's fine, but it's also just actually sad.
I can imagine it's people, horrible. Like, in 1977, who'd gone to see this thinking, I don't like that, because it's so, it seems ahead of its time as a joke, because it's almost like brass eye dark.
Mm. I think what's wrong with it is, it just. I mean, I've never put someone to say you're not allowed to say anything, but because it so visualizes the missing, like, essentially, it's like your child has died. Imagine what it'd be like if they were still dead, but they stayed at like just the corpse was at all family gatherings and everyone acted normal. It's just like, no, that seeing that for real is really just sad. The idea of it being flippant and a horrible thing to say is funny, and then but visualizing it as they did, you're like, oh, the reality. just traumatising.
That's the
probably
thing.
Upsetting to many people who have lost children.
With something like Weekend at Bernie's, for example, he still looks fine.
He's not rotten.
Yeah.
But with this, it was just, no, that's...
Anthony, thoughts?
There's not much to say, really.
Best bit, right?
Didn't laugh. What more can you say?
Yeah.
Right, move on.
The courtroom is the next one. Which had one good joke for me, which was, I'm going to flip all the cards now and tell you that Mr. I can't remember his name, is a spoon.
He's a spoon. it was genuinely the weirdest punchline to a joke, because it was just, is it become Jeopardy? Is that what they were spoofing?
Yeah, it's a game show. I'm not sure exactly which one it is, but he's supposed to be a thing and they're supposed to ask him questions and guess what it is. I can't remember the name of the game.
They skip to the punchline quickly. They just start drawn out, and then it's like, he's a spoon. He's a spoon. And they emphasize how stupid a thing to say that is, because like one of the lawyers flubs his line and calls him a spool or something, and it's just like, they really say, no, he... And I thought that was funny. I thought the spoon joke was good. You don't agree?
I hated this.
The general sketch was a bit weak.
I didn't like Fistful of Yen, because it was too long, but it had good stuff in it. Whereas I thought the courtroom thing was just terrible. I did not find it, like, it's one of those comedy, like, sketches that I would be embarrassed if I was watching it with someone else.
It's like if a hybrid of a cracker and a dad joke got together, and it was just the visual pun manifestation of just, he's leading the witness. Oh, yes, that is a misleading common phrase in the courtroom.
That shirt is immaterial. What?
Actually, there was one other joke that I liked. And it was when the guy got sworn in, and the guy who did it goes, "You make me so happy," and kissed him in the face.
That was funny. Okay, there were a couple of things. I liked the stenographer getting a sex change at the end.
Him behaving weirdly, like instead of typing, was funny, but I didn't really.
I think that's the guy from Airplane who. Like, I don't know how else to describe him. He's the one in the tower towards the end of the film who just camps around the place.
Right.
And is one of the funniest parts of the film. And I think that's the same guy. But no, I just... This whole courtroom sketch felt like when you ask GCSE drama kids to do comedy. And like...
I also am offended by that remark.
So am I. But, hey, I was one too. That's what I mean. It's a criticism of myself. I know what I was like when I was 15 doing GCSE drama. And like, you give them 10 minutes to write a funny courtroom sketch. And it's...
Anthony, any thoughts?
By this point in the film, I'm kind of like tailing out and I'm not really remembering a lot of the stuff.
Thinking about all the stuff you could have been doing.
Yeah, I can only really remember one more sketch before the end. But I thought this one was okay. It went on very long. But
I felt like they were getting tired.
I kind of liked the way it went.
Okay. That's fair.
Its structure was good, but I think by that point in the film, you were mentally exhausted.
Mm. I felt like they were mentally exhausted making the film, because the jokes were so like, all right, we need to put a joke here, like with the sex implement that was involved.
Yes.
And the whole like putting it on his head and then he's making a mockery of the court.
Was terrible.
Like,
yeah.
What are you doing now?
And then they had the whole like, oh, it's the guy who was presenting the show about the courtroom is the guy who did it. And it's just like, we all saw that coming. Can we please move on? It was, I'm failing all of you amateur drama students. I'm sorry. It's all C minuses at least. I mean, you know, some of you, funny jokes, but otherwise torture.
Next was Cleopatra Schwartz, which is my favourite premise.
it's a movie I actually would quite like to watch. The blaxploitation movie featuring like someone like Coffee or any of the characters played by... Pam Grier marrying an acidic Jew and then continuing to do a blaxploitation movie would have been a great film to watch. So it was a good idea, some interesting visuals. And I loved how the husband was somewhat boring. Like, he wasn't like a gun-firing Jew particularly, or like doing rabbi-themed exploitation stuff. Just learning how to be a rabbi and stuff.
He was really enjoying loading that gun for her, though.
Yeah.
Feeding her the ammunition for the...
I did quite like that one. It was funny because it was actually not that far removed from an actual trailer.
True. Yeah. So, yeah, Cleopatra Schwartz. quite a good idea. Maybe get, you know, Robert Rodriguez to have a crack at it after he's finished making terrible 3D kids movies. I think he's done now. Maybe he'll move.
No, now he's making terribly boring superhero movies.
Oh.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Zack Snyder.
Mm.
Okay.
Zinc Oxide was next. That was the one where there was a woman in her kitchen, and it was saying, if you didn't have zinc oxide, you wouldn't have that pan, your leg, bricks in your car.
Actually, that was funny.
Yeah.
That was just funny.
I think this is probably my favourite sketch, just because it kept escalating it, and it kept doing it well.
Yeah, if it had ended too soon, it would have been rubbish, but it did go. Again, it was that thing of some sketches go far enough, others just do it right and do it far enough.
But no, there was some good stuff in this. I liked her bra disappearing and the the dramatic sag that happened. And
I just want to put in there that wasn't one of the saucier ones.
No,
the way that could have been, it was.
Yeah, the one that made me actually laugh properly was you wouldn't have your artificial limb and her leg drops off. I don't know. This is one of the ones that works because it's such a basic premise and the jokes are all so simple.
Yeah.
But you don't need the painfully forced setup that you would have in the courtroom scene.
Because it was drawing on something that's so familiar, they had to set up nothing. And that meant they could just get into it.
It's like those old videos that they would cart out in science when you were in secondary school. So next is Danger Seekers.
Yes, with a joke. I don't know if we can actually say.
No, but
but
in how brazen it was and how blatant, I laughed. Because it was just, and I knew it was coming the second he's a danger seeker, and it sets him up as wearing a crash helmet and a flight suit, like a parachute jumper would wear. And he's in an alley, and he deliberately seeks out danger. And then he's walking over, and as soon as a group of black guys came into the shot, I was like, I know exactly what's coming.
Yeah, and then you're just kind of like, oh, they're not gonna go there, are they? And then when they do, I don't know what, I don't know how to describe my reaction. It's somewhere between my mouth hitting the floor and laughing hilariously.
I laughed because the guy who plays the danger seeker shouts.
He really goes for it.
With such gusto. And it's such a juvenile joke. But that's part of why I found it so funny. Because, and it's not, I think they get away with it because it's not done in any, it's done in the same way that word is used in something like Blazing Saddles.
So, okay. The thing I wanted to mention about this sketch and this movie in general is that I'm so pleased of the number of black men and women that are in this movie. There are six black guys in that sketch, which is possibly the most I've seen in a movie, and that is wonderful.
Yeah, I suppose.
Because Hollywood is racist and sexist and horrible.
I don't know, it depends what kind of movies you watch.
I guess, but it's a thing that comes up fairly regularly in sort of gripes of people in Hollywood, is that you've got a lot of actors fighting for the four or five parts that come up in a year.
Yeah. but I don't know. We didn't talk about the race, the way race is portrayed in Fistful of Yen either. And like on the surface, you think, "Ooh, that's a bit racist," but it's not. it is in a way that the film is a product of the 70s.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's the same with the Danger Seeker sketch. And, like, it's not racism. Well, it's not racism in a malicious way. And it does remind me of Blazing Saddles, where it's aware. Like, the whole point of the Danger Seekers sketch is you know what's coming.
Yeah.
And it's not making fun of those black guys. Mm. Like, it's a, oh my God, is he going to... And then, you know, they take off and chase him and, like... But I thought it was funny. It made me laugh. And part of it was the vigor with which he shouted it.
Yeah, he just went for it. And that was amazing. The last one. This... Right. They literally ended with a climax of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about that. As a thing. This is a bold one to end on.
Yeah.
Is Eyewitness News.
And it's not a, like, it's not a terrible idea. And I like the way the guys in the TV, the newscaster guys, sell it. But it's just another one of those ones, it's like Catholic schoolgirls in trouble. Like, it made me feel a bit seedy. It's like, I don't know how I feel about just sitting here watching this with, like, my wife over there doing something else. And I'm like, I'm going to turn the volume down really low on my laptop. Like,
it did occur to me that I should have given you a warning about this movie before you watched it, that you don't want to watch this movie with any member of your family. Especially because I would almost have gone as far as to say, because I know there is a child that lives in your household, did you actually want to lock yourself in a room so that they don't see this?
It's more that, like, so, okay, some family members would be like, oh, this is disgusting. And others would be, are you watching this? This is your sense of humour, is it?
Are you watching this is your sense of humour? That's very close to the response I got when she overheard the courtroom scene. And I just wanted to apologize.
It's not me. It was kind of film club podcast idea. Yeah. I didn't make myself watch it.
No, she just said, whose pick is this? And I said, Abby's. So it's judged. On you now.
I know, but my reasoning was that it's so weird that at some point in time, this was what we enjoyed in theory.
Well, some people. Well, like, in regard to the last sketch, it was an odd one to finish on, because it sort of was like, and that's not exactly the biggest punchline to just, oh, it's over now. All that, like, drawn-out comedy where I was wanting it to end, and then suddenly when it picked up pace and just did a sketch idea, and we're done. That's it. We ran out of ideas.
Didn't it end with the news bulletin after that about I'm not wearing any pants?
Possibly,
wasn't there one
yes.
more of those?
Oh, they could have been. And then...
Oh, no, I'm wrong. It went straight to the credits.
Yeah, see? Just abruptly going, well, we did a crass joke about nudity, and it was kind of the little guys in the screen trying to, like, when the people were looking at them, and they were trying to go, carry on doing the news. I kind of liked the joke, but, you know, again, it could have just been in a TV show, sketch show thing. It just kind of ended, and then you kind of go, oh, the free at last. But it's also, that was weird.
It's one of those films that doesn't end. It just stopped.
It did. Mm. But, you know, we've pulled it apart now. Probably unfairly, because it's a different time. And also, jokes don't bear pulling apart. You either just laugh or you don't. Like, I think we laughed at times. We groaned at times. We maybe wanted to die at times. And other times we were questioning reality.
Are you pastiching a Winston Churchill speech?
We were confused on the beaches. Wasn't trying to.
I don't know. Like, I always feel bad when I use something being dated as a criticism, because it's not fair. Because a film can't help when it was made. So, but... It's something I would warn someone of if they were going to watch this, is I would say it is really, like, old school. Like, it is dated. And it doesn't have much... I don't know. I guess it does kind of set a template for what comes later. Like, you can see the seeds of the kind of stuff that they went on to make. And John Landis, too. I mean, this is the reason he ended up directing the one Animal House.
Yes.
Yeah, this was the reason he was picked to direct Animal House.
Right. There's a lot to thank, but like, you know, kind of as the title suggests, it's enjoyable for some, and like kind of like Kentucky Fried Chicken, it is kind of, it can be enjoyed, but it's really shameful, bad for you food. Yeah. Like, and it kind of suits the whole film is kind of bad for you, but some people really love it because it's what they've always wanted, slightly, you know, raunchy and inappropriate humour. They want to gobble it all down in a bucket. And other people are like, I shouldn't, but I will because I'm naughty. Like,
it's just, though, that the Fistful of Yen and the courtroom scene both just... They do so much damage.
Yeah.
To a film that is, like, reasonably funny and moves along at a decent clip for the most part. And then it grinds to a halt with Fistful of Yen.
It's like,
and then it picks up again, like, and then the courtroom comes and slaps you in the face.
It's like the sharp wishbone of the chicken has got caught in your throat. And there's a lot of, like, a life-threatening moment where you kind of like, it just goes all wrong, I guess. So what I'm trying to do, guys, is build to our rating system. And I kind of want it to be things off the KFC menu. That this thing is, what piece of southern fried chicken is it? Because I have sort of got an analogy in mind.
Oh.
So think on that while you're summing up your thoughts. And I will go with, it's like, they're always terribly named in KFC. It's always like the blinging, zinging, stupid burger with with extra in it and in your, like, just any sort of in your face, and anything that sounds like Pimp My Royale with Cheese kind of language for pretend teenagers who don't exist from South London. That was a garbled mess. Point is, there's loads to choose from if you think about it. I'm going to say they're a little bit like hot rods, because there's something phallic about that, but also it's the dirty southern fried chicken you desire, but weirdly it's been, like, put on a stick and they're still trying to, you know, it's just, it doesn't quite make sense having, like, little balls all on a kebab and southern fried, and they have rancid sauce with it. And it's just a ill-thought-out thing that doesn't fit and isn't very popular, but at the same time, it's still southern fried chicken, and therefore tasty and, you know, appealing to certain people. So it's sort of like hot rods. It's people trying to... It's marketing trying to say, oh, they're hot rods. It sounds like it's cool for kids. And it kind of sounds like it's fast and racy. And it's just chicken on a stick. So that's my thing. You can go with whatever. Maybe an ice cream avalanche or a zinger twister. I don't know what you think of, but there you go.
What I'm going to go with is when, for me, they spoil foods by making them really hot and spicy for no reason.
Yeah.
Because I used to really like southern fried food, not specifically KFC, even just southern fried. I liked because it was mildly spicy and it had an interesting taste, but now it's been put into this horrible extra spicy pain fest for me. And it's like that when I've got, say, a selection and it turns out one of them is the super spicy thing that I accidentally eat and it really hurts the roof of my mouth, it makes my eyes stream.
Just like the film.
There are things in this movie that I like. There are things in this movie I find funny. But there's just the sex elements and some of the sort of 70s elements that are difficult to pinpoint but are there, that just clang for me completely. They don't work for me at all.
Ruin the flavour and make you go with something else.
Yes.
Who wants to have another go?
I'll say I think I look on this film a little more favourably than the rest of you are.
Mm.
I chuckled most of the way through it, and I thought for the time it must have been a very kind of brave, kind of experimental film.
Yeah, like, it is. It does some kind of bold stuff.
Yeah, and it is very unique. Like, other than when you mentioned the Monty Python kind of films, I can't really think of anything that's just kind of a film that's just made of sketches, kind of various thrown together sketches. So, and it is kind of the building blocks to the rest of the film, so I kind of do kind of forgive it a little bit for that.
Mine did sound a little harsher than I intended. It's sort of like there is a lot of chicken to breadcrumb.
in fairness, with the comparison to that Monty Python film, and now for something completely different, it is hard to do, or it seems hard to do, a feature-length collection of sketches, because that, too, from, you know, a lot of people in America and the UK consider Monty Python to be, like, the masters of sketch comedy. And that film is pretty uneven, too.
Mm.
Like, it's because you need one concept to hang it on, and the ones that are one story, one idea for a like film, I think work better.
Mm.
I just wish I was like 10 years younger when I saw this, because I think I would have thought this was probably hilarious like before I was 18 and not really kind of properly exposed to like nakedness and like
before you were
racism.
Jaded, adult.
This and a lot of other movies from the 70s and 80s, they were 18s, but that's so not who it was for. It was for 15-year-olds to watch and go, oh, this is amazing, he's killing a man. Oh, boobs.
They were R-rated and 18-rated films made specifically for younger kids to sneak in and watch.
Yeah. But you were saying, Anthony.
Yeah, if I'm going to compare this to some sort of KFC kind of meal, I suppose it'll have to be like a huge kind of family variety bucket, but where one poor person is forced to eat all of it. So you're starting off, and it's fine. It's chicken, it's greasy, it's lovely. But then you're getting to the middle, and it just feels horrible and wrong.
You've still got your wings and your popcorn chickens to scoff down, even though you don't want
them. Yeah, and it's getting a bit laborious. But there's always kind of room for dessert. So the ice cream at the end is not so bad.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Jamie, have you got anything else off the menu? We are not sponsored by KFC, of course. So we have to try it. We're obligated.
This is going to be hard because I don't want to denigrate KFC and get the podcast.
Southern Fried Chicken and other chicken cottage and places.
I don't really like it, so just food from there is it? Like, I don't know, Anthony's is really good, because it's, like, it's all laid out in front of you, and particularly if you're hungry anyway, for the first few buckets of food, you're, like, you're perfectly satisfied, and then after a while, you're just becoming exhausted, and it's, like, because you're full and you're still eating, the more flavour things have, the worse they are, because it's just piling it on top of what's already there.
It's like, you're also going to enjoy the bits you really like, and then there's the other bits where it's like, well, that's a really undernourished looking chicken leg. That's not a good one. That's like the toenail or whatever. Just come on, I don't have to eat some of these. Are horrible. Send those back, you know.
I don't know. It's like, watching it was like someone had brought me some fast food when I wasn't particularly hungry anyway. And I still just kind of picked at it. And every now and again, something was kind of, oh, that's kind of tasty. But for the most part, it all just tasted like salt.
It could be something like a limited edition meal that's kind of a little bit weird and different and experimental. And you have it once, and you don't particularly want it again. And you kind of hope it goes off the menu soon.
it's sort of, oh, there's a World Cup. Let's theme it to that and put a different kind of sauce on and pretend it's special. But it's not worth having. It's all those things from the chicken shop.
Kentucky Fried Movie fits the title because it is, like Anthony said, it's that variety pack where some people will like some things, some people will like other things. Nobody's going to like everything that's on there.
And if you're caught doing it on your own with a big bucket, you know, like, there's a lot of shame involved, and once in a while, okay, I like this kind of thing.
I will say, though, that courtroom sketch is like when you get a massive bone in your boneless chicken.
Oh, yeah.
And you're betrayal.
Yeah. I think we've said our piece on the Kentucky Fried Movie, our piece of chicken.
Oh. I agree.
Anyway, so how are we going to sign off this one? Just goodbyes and
do what the movie does and just stop.
Yeah. And credits. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.